Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us, and we're going to be having an interesting show today. We're going to be talking about Daniel Hirsch, Vice President of the American Foreign Service Association, and our scheduled guest, Susan Johnson, your president. Her father is very ill. He's a former diplomat himself. We wish them well, but we're certainly glad to have you here this morning, Mr. Hirsch. Hey, could you explain to people, particularly people who don't know much about or don't care much about the Foreign Service, what AFSA is? How big the Foreign Service is, and then what's going on?
Okay, I think actually you just put your thumb on part of what AFSA is. When you said that people don't know much about or care about the Foreign Service, AFSA is the Professional Association of the Foreign Service, and we are also the sole recognized bargaining unit of the American Foreign Service. So we are both a union and a professional association. As such, we negotiate for terms of employment and so on for the American Foreign Service. But a big part of what we do is we try to inform the American public about what the Foreign Service is, what it does for the American people, and in this case, what the consequences are of damaging the American Foreign Service. So we try to develop the Foreign Service as a profession. We try to develop things like curricula for schools that are trying to produce future Foreign Service members. And we do lobbying for the Foreign Service, both on Congress and with the general public.
When I was a copy boy for the Washington Post about 400 years ago, a lot of my fellow copy boys, many of them were Ivy League school graduates, and many of them were working as copy boys until they could take either the bar exam, which some failed, or the Foreign Service exam, which nearly everybody failed the first time around. And I know it is one of the toughest elite programs in the country. What is the Foreign Service? You know, you think of an ambassador, a State Department type, but it's bigger than that.
Actually, I mean, AFSA represents five agencies, which are the State Department, USAID, the Federal Commercial Service, I'm sorry, the Foreign Commercial Service, the Foreign Agricultural Service, and IBB, which includes the Voice of America. So the Foreign Service basically consists of five agencies that, A, represent the diplomatic interests of the United States, and B, promote trade, both of agricultural and commercial products in both directions, and facilitate the safety and the safety of Americans overseas, and protect our country in various different ways. Our bases overseas are embassies, and as you said, an embassy is led by an ambassador. But these days, a large embassy can include 20 or 30 different, or representatives of 20 or 30 different agencies of the U.S. government. A large part of what we do these days has to do with helping America create jobs and promoting American trade.
Well, that's right. As embassies, you have a part of the community, or I would assume are FBI agents and DEA agents, among others, huh?
That is true. Many embassies have FBI agencies and DEA agents and DHS people in some cases if they are sort of access countries to the U.S. And also the FAA, aviation people, people that facilitate shipping. A wide variety of things.
I would think that among federal agencies, that working for the Foreign Service of any of those five agencies you mentioned, working for the Foreign Service, is among the more dangerous, hazardous occupations in the U.S. government.
It certainly is. We are on the front lines, and unlike members of our military, we are not armed. In many cases, what I like to say is that 9/11 was a wake-up call for the United States about some of the dangers lurking out there. But for the American Foreign Service, it was not a wake-up call at all. It was simply another day, in essence, in the dangers that we already faced. I personally was targeted or was in an embassy that was targeted by Osama bin Laden a couple of years before 9/11.
That's right. You had the problems in Africa and in the Middle East. There have
That's
been
right.
attacks on embassies and explosions and people killed. So.
That's right. And these days, of course, Foreign Service members work in places like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, sometimes side by side with the military, sometimes embedded with military, and in any event, in places that are extremely dangerous. And even putting those places aside, if you look at Yemen or Somalia or even some of the more traditionally calmer countries like Egypt or Tunisia, things can happen overnight that can become extremely dangerous.
Exciting life. For the Foreign Service, we know now some of the dangers, the hazards of it, and people all sign up. Nobody's drafted for it, so people sign up to do it. But things like pay and benefits are as important as to people in the Foreign Service as they are to people in any way of life, any job. How are things going in the Foreign Service right now? What's the pay situation? What's the budgetary situation? And how about this temporary deficit raising effort? Has that any impact on the Foreign Service?
Well, yes. The bottom line is that Foreign Service members are American families just like anybody else. Except that typically many American families can have two breadwinners in that both spouses can work. In the American Foreign Service, typically that's not possible, and only the Foreign Service member is the sole breadwinner for the family. The Foreign Service is currently faced with the possibility of a 16% pay cut, and is currently paid less well than most civilian employees of the U.S. government, because most civilian employees of the U.S. government, I should say all civilian employees of the U.S. government, except those for DOD who are assigned overseas, receive something called comparability pay, which for Washington employees is close to 25% of their salary and is never less than about 15% anywhere in the U.S. Foreign Service members have just started to receive comparability pay while working overseas, and Congress would like now to, or some elements in Congress would like now to remove that, effectively giving them a 16% pay cut at a time when America really needs good people in the Foreign Service. This will affect retention, it will affect recruitment, and it affects the daily lives of the Foreign Service members.
Well, when you say comparability pay, do you mean, is that the same as locality pay?
Comparability pay is frequently called locality pay, but it is not a cost of living type of locality pay. It was actually created by the Federal Pay Comparability Act of 1990 as a way to equalize or reduce the gap between federal salaries and payment for similar for similar skills in different localities within the U.S. So, for example, Washington locality pay is not based on the cost of living in Washington, but rather it is based on what a typical employer would pay for a typical skill set in Washington.
So it's similar but not the same. Well, listeners to Hershey, thank you for taking time out of your day. We really appreciate it. Learned a lot about the Foreign Service. And please give Ms. Johnson our best wishes for her father.
I will do that. Thank you, sir.
Much.
Good
thank
talking
you.
To you.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be right back on WFED 1500 AM.
Federal employees. With a 2-year pay freeze, rising health care costs, and potential changes to retirement annuity calculations on the way, recent financial events may have you concerned. First Command Financial Advisors understand the federal benefits system and can help you maximize the value of your benefits. Visit federal.firstcommand.com for an office near you and to request a complimentary financial consultation. That's federal.firstcommand.com.
First Command Financial Planning, Inc. Member SIPC and FINRA. First Command is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government. The challenge is to accomplish your mission even when you're under cyber attack. The cyber analysts at Kinetic North America, along with their proactive cyber solutions, can protect your critical information. With mission assurance solutions, insider threat identification, and advanced persistent threat detection, they have the technical and cyber capabilities to keep you ahead of threats. Learn more at kinetic-na.com/get-secure. That's kinetic-na.com/get-secure. When it's critical, it's Kinetic North America.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Some people can't imagine how someone who is blind or has other significant disabilities contributes to our economy. But more than 47,000 Ability One employees fulfill federal contracts, providing quality goods and services. Some people think that jobs for those who are blind or have other significant disabilities cost taxpayers. Ability One creates job opportunities without additional cost to federal taxpayers. Some think these individuals can't achieve independence. We know better. What do you think? Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
Here's your chance to get away for a little fun next week. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
You can head for the Poconos in Pennsylvania to cool off or to actually heat things up. Recreation News readers can get special savings of up to 40% at the three Cove Haven resorts in the Poconos. You can find yourself in a romantic suite with a private indoor pool and maybe even a champagne tower jacuzzi. There are lots of outdoor activities, too, at the resorts, and breakfast and dinner are included, along with some great name entertainment. Check out the details on page 54 of the August issue of Recreation News or at recreationnews.com. But remember, you have to book by September 30th.
A lot of people like going on cruises. You have anything for them?
Sure. We've got a special military discount from Royal Caribbean through Sado Vacations. There's a 20% saving on more than 100 sailings through December 31st. Now's the time to think about fall sailings to see New England color or holiday cruises to the islands. So you can get details on page 17 of the August Recreation News.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We just had a nice chat with Mr. Hirsch from the Foreign Service Association. I learned a lot about the diplomatic corps and the other agencies that are involved in it. My guests now are some regulars, Steve Losey of the Federal Times, Sean Riley, also a senior writer for the Federal Times. Okay. All right. Listen, we're going to be talking with Steve Losey and Sean Riley of the Federal Times. They're going to bring us up to speed on the latest with the Deficit Reduction Act and what's been happening. And we want to get some emphasis on the FAA furloughs, how that's working, how the extent of it. We had a very thoughtful caller this morning who wanted us to point out that that in addition to the 4,000 plus FAA people who are furloughed through no fault of their own, there may be as many as 40, I believe he estimated up to 70,000 contract employees who are also not going to be paid. And while the FAA employees may someday be reimbursed for the, heaven forbid, 6 weeks that they 6 weeks pay they lose, that the contractors probably won't get paid at all. So, gents, are you with us?
We're here, yes.
Hey, yes, I think there's some rule in radio that you can't have three Irishmen on the same time, but we've gotten a temporary waiver of that. But Steve Losey and Sean Riley, and I know you guys have been following this stuff, as all of us have on the beat. And before we get into the debt reduction and some of the other things, Sean, I know you wrote extensively about the FAA furlough. Our own Jared Serbu here at Federal News Radio wrote about it. What's going on?
Well, Mike, it's complicated, but the gist of it is essentially that the FAA has been operating without a permanent reauthorization bill for about 4 years. Instead, it's been working under a series of stopgap extensions that, as of last month, had reached 20. And what happened was late last month, around July 23rd, the Congress failed to agree on another extension that would have carried the FAA into September. As a result, the agency no longer had the authority to collect and deposit passenger ticket taxes that go into a trust fund that pay about 4,000 FAA employees. So as of July 23rd, those folks were furloughed. They remain on furlough. And now that Congress has left for its August recess, there appears to be no chance of resolving this stalemate before Labor Day at the earliest.
And this four-year mess that's been going on, this is very bipartisan, I take it then, because you would have this under a Republican president and a democratically controlled Congress, and now you have it under a Democratic president and a Congress that where the House is run by the Republicans.
Yeah, the long-term issues, I think, are bipartisan. There's just been an inability to reach a consensus on certain critical issues facing the FAA. The immediate crisis, though, I think, is somewhat more partisan. In the House, it's pitted the House Transportation Committee, John Mike, Republican from Florida, against the Democratic chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia. And well, as I said, it is extremely complicated. But an underlying issue is that last year, a labor board that probably most people have never heard of, the National Mediation Board, issued a ruling that essentially made it easier for airline employees to unionize. Chairman Micah wants to reverse that, although that's not in the stopgap bill that the House passed, but that's being resisted by Democrats in the Senate. And they're also concerned about some cuts that Micah wants to make to what's known as the Essential Air Service program, which provides subsidized air travel to small towns. And his bill would affect subsidies for travel to states like Nevada, which is, of course, the home state for Senate Majority Harry Reid, and also in West Virginia, which, as I said, is represented by Senator Rockefeller.
And former Senator Robert Byrd, who is every other thing in West Virginia is named after him.
That's absolutely correct.
Well, if you told me that the Congress would leave town for an extended vacation after a series of extended vacations and leave 4,000 FAA employees, 4,000 federal employees, and tens of thousands of private sector employees payless, furloughed for up to 6 weeks, I wouldn't believe it, but that's what's happened.
You've got a lot of company. I don't think anyone expected this to happen in Congress to leave without getting this resolved.
I mean,
particularly in the economy we're in right now.
Yeah, I it's hard to believe, but it's happening.
We can't expect them to do their jobs now, can we?
Well, that's true. And by the way, members of Congress are getting paid on vacation, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, just a check. For FAA employees and any other feds who are having money problems, there is a way out. The Federal Employee Education and Assistance, FEEA, does make loans to people and grants in some cases, and it said it's ready, willing, and able, and there have been some matching grants from Blue Cross and other organizations. So if you want to go to www.feea.org, that's the place to go for money. Okay, now, as if the FAA thing wasn't crazy enough, the world as we know it, civilization as we know it, didn't end. The House and the Senate and the President did reach a compromise, a temporary compromise on this debt ceiling thing. And we were predicting, at a worst-case scenario, that if they had gone further, that a large number of federal benefits, including an extension of the current federal pay freeze, might be approved. So they didn't do anything, but what's left hanging out there?
Well, you're right. The deal that they announced Sunday night does not, for the time being, include anything that we've been discussing for the past couple of weeks affecting federal employees. No high three to high five change, no increase in the amount feds contribute to their pensions, no further pay freeze, nothing like that. which was kind of a surprise because up until, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were hearing that the House was zeroing in on just these kinds of changes. Now, the cuts, the first $1 trillion in cuts is concentrated in discretionary spending. Now, what is coming down the pike, by the end of November, this so-called super Congress, this congressional committee of about a dozen lawmakers from both houses of Congress, they've got to come up with another $1.5 trillion in additional savings. And everybody I've spoken to expects that is where the pain is going to come for federal employees. They're going to be empowered to take a look at things like entitlements. So that's where we could see the switch to the chain CPI for increasing the amount or decreasing the amount of cost of living adjustments for federal pensions, for example.
Well, that's the one thing. That would reduce pensions by what, 0.25%?
Yeah, more or less.
Over each year, and that would have a major effect over time.
The compounding
in reverse, if you will. The other thing they're looking at, presumably, is the switching from the high three to the high five formula, and they would base annuities on that. And earlier this week, on Monday, on the four-year benefit show, Tammy Flanagan discussed that at some length and said it would have a major impact on annuities, really for life, if that were put into place. Also talking about, as you mentioned the show last week, a voucher system whereby federal workers and retirees would have a finite amount of money that they could use to buy health insurance, and that as health premiums increased over the years, as they always do, the dollar share and the percentage share that employees and retirees pay would be going up each year. And I believe the National Active and Retired Federal Employees guess estimated that within 10 years, employees would be paying 50% of the premium instead of the 30% they pay now.
It's actually more than that. They expect 56%. When I crunch the numbers, my estimates come to slightly lower than that, about 44%. But long story short, it's going to be a sizable bite out of federal employees' paychecks if that rule does go into effect.
Right. And the other thing, to talk about a cut in take-home pay, is a possible proposal that would raise the amount of money that federal workers under both the CSRS and the FERS programs that would come out of their paychecks every 2 weeks in order to finance their own retirement.
That's right. And that's that was the main thing that House lawmakers in the Obama administration were zeroing in on before their whole plan exploded. But the way it was going to work out, and Congressman Dennis Ross, the chairman of the Federal Workforce Subcommittee, he confirmed that this was probably going to happen. New employees would pay a vast amount more contribute a vast amount more to their FERS pensions, and existing federal employees would have lower increases phased in over 3 years. Basically, the numbers varied, but it was probably going to be more or less half a percentage point per year for 3 years once the pay freeze ends for current employees, both FERS and CSRS. So I fully expect when this congressional committee meets in November and they come up with a proposal, I fully expect that will at least be on the table, if not in the final announcement.
Maybe leading the parade. Well, an indication of that was that Vice President Joe Biden brought that up, raised that issue sometime back in the so-called Blair Commission group. But folks, need to take a short break here. If you'll hold on, we'll be right back and get the latest on what's happening with the budget here on WFED 1500 AM.
Teens, sodas, and weight. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. This may be hard for teens to swallow, but sugar-sweetened sodas, sports drinks, and the like can give them something they don't want, excess weight. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looked at teens' beverage choices, and the CDC's Caitlin Merlot says teens should avoid sugary drinks.
Drinking too many sugar-sweetened beverages can result in several different health problems, including cavities, as well as excess weight gain leading to obesity and type 2 diabetes.
Merlot says CDC's study found that water, milk, and 100% fruit juices were actually more popular choices by teens, but the study notes that teens also drank a lot of sugar-sweetened beverages. The study was in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Here's Paul Benda, Director of Homeland Security, Advanced Research Project Agency, DHS, S&T, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Riverbed Technology.
Well, I think the future really is going to be that technology is going to have to converge with efficiencies. That, you know, we're going to have to build these new capabilities on the backs of creating better cost models for us.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How would you like to increase the productivity of your mobile and teleworkers? Now you can through Riverbed. Their WAN optimization solutions empower mobile workers with high-performance access to email, files, and applications and keep them collaborating in real time. Challenges and delays in working remotely suddenly disappear, and you're complying with telework and COOP mandates. Free your mobile workers to work anywhere with Riverbed. Learn more at riverbed.com. That's R-I-V-E-R-B-E-D.com. Riverbed. Think fast.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Glenn Holra, who is a principal with Dixon, Hughes, and Goodman, a CPA firm located in Rockville and all around the Washington, D.C. metro area. Glenn concentrates on construction and government contracting. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Join us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort AP Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Teens, sodas, and weight. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. This may be hard for teens to swallow, but sugar-sweetened sodas, sports drinks, and the like can give them something they don't want, excess weight. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looked at teens' beverage choices, and the CDC's Caitlin Merlot says teens should avoid sugary drinks.
Drinking too many sugar-sweetened beverages can result in several different health problems, including cavities, as well as excess weight gain leading to obesity and type 2 diabetes.
Merlot says CDC's study found that water, milk, and 100% fruit juices were actually more popular choices by teens, but the study notes that teens also drank a lot of sugar-sweetened beverages. The study was in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times. Good discussion about the budget situation and whatnot. Gents, how about we had a couple of people who've emailed. They want to know about the possibility of furloughs, early outs, and buyouts. Oh, we've lost them again. Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We got you, yes.
Okay. That's certainly a possibility. There's, you know, with this $1 trillion and deficit cuts coming over a decade, and Sean will talk more about that, agencies are going to be looking for places to cut, and we could certainly see furloughs, you know, possibly furloughs, but more likely buyouts or early retirements. We've already seen agencies like the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Government Printing Office and the Agriculture Department make offers as far as or announce plans to offer buyouts and early outs. HUDs recently asked OPM for permission to offer those. Education and ATF are already considering. So those are just a handful of agencies that are already thinking about it or working on it, and it's just going to get worse as the 2012 budget process proceeds and agencies have less money to play around with. Staffing is probably going to be one of the first places that gets trimmed as agencies adjust this new fiscal reality we are in.
And, of course, the Postal Service has the biggest buyout program going on, although the dollar figure and the timetable are different, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they wound up a buyout program that ended, I believe, in May, which got about 2,000 folks from their executive administrative supervisory ranks. And right now, as you know, they also just last week proposed studying about 3,650 post offices for closing. So that's another element of the downsizing. That will probably be the first of a number of, sort of a long-term process of reducing its physical footprint.
And the postal buyouts, I think, were $20,000 payable over 2 years, was it?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think $10,000 payable this year, then $10,000 payable next year.
Has anybody, that $25,000 amount on the buyout for most white-collar federal workers, that's $25,000 before deductions, which can be substantial, and they can bring it down, depending on the retirement system you're under, to between $16,000 and $18,000, which is not a whole lot of money to give up a career. That figure was set in the 90s during the Clinton administration, and it was aimed at blue-collar workers at first in the Defense Department. But have you guys heard any serious talk about increasing the amount of the buyout?
No, I haven't heard any rumblings along those lines. You haven't either, Sean, have you?
No.
Yeah, I think probably not, and I would not expect any changes in the size of buyouts, especially given the political reality we are in with the fiscal deficits the government is facing. And to be honest, kind of there's a lot of lawmakers out there who think that federal employees are already overpaid, and they won't be inclined to say, okay, we're going to give people even more money to quit their jobs at a time when a lot of private sector workers are getting laid off and not getting anything to leave their jobs.
Well, I know philosophically most Americans don't want the government running everything, and they don't want a huge government. But by the same token, we've got unemployment that's not going away, and it seems to get worse from month to month. And even those bad figures are always invariably adjusted. And you find out that the situation is worse than you thought, but they're adjusted every month. Is anybody talking about the impact, the additional impact on the economy of a much smaller government?
Well, that's certainly a big concern, and that's one reason why a lot of the more liberal-leaning organizations are very angry at the deal that the White House and Democratic lawmakers struck with the House and Senate Republicans, saying that their belief is that more government cutting government spending when there's not a lot of consumer buying power out there is going to just take more money out of the economy and could hamper the recovery. Conservatives say that one of the biggest problems they disagree and say that one of the biggest problems we're facing is these massive government deficits. So there's a very bit of a philosophical disconnect between the two parties. But yeah, there are a lot of people who are concerned about the effect of cutting government spending on the overall United States economy.
Yeah, well, one of the major segments of the increase in unemployment has been in state and local governments, where they've cut back on what some people considered bloated bureaucracies. Others said it was just cutting it to the bone. But this morning in his Washington Post column, Cortland Malloy points out that he says that while African Americans are delighted, proud, and happy to have one of their own as the president of the United States, many of them are unhappy with these policies. And he cites majority, if you will, Prince George's County, and how many black people there and government workers who have lost or faced the loss of their jobs.
Yeah, that's correct. And you're absolutely right that the state and local governments have taken their workforce, especially, have taken a big hit. And we haven't seen the same happen to the federal employee workforce, but we could see that in the future. There's a lot of proposals out there for cutting the size of the federal workforce, some 10%, which would equate to roughly 200,000. Some even, I believe Tom Coburn a couple of weeks ago, as the debt crisis was reaching its peak, said we should cut 300,000 federal employees, which would hit agencies very hard. So we are most likely going to see reductions in the federal workforce, whether through these mandated massive cuts or through the buyouts and early outs that agencies are doing to kind of bring their operating costs under control. So it'll be we're just going to have to wait and see how these things shake out.
Well, you know, I think one of the things this recent activities in Congress and in the White House have taught us is to not make any long-range predictions, or at least have the ability to change your name and move into another trade if you do. 2009 was probably the best year federal workers, postal employees, and retirees have had in Congress. Number of things that have been on the union and the association wish lists for years came to pass and happened. And the Obama administration came in, and with the TARP program and various other programs to stimulate the economy, there was talk of insourcing jobs that had been outsourced by both the Clinton and the Bush administrations, bring those jobs that are inherently governmental back into government. And the estimate was that would increase federal employment by a minimum of 150,000, and now the very same people are talking about cuts of a minimum of 200,000.
Yeah, that's correct, and I'm not quite sure exactly what that's going to mean for those insourcing efforts, but it could certainly throw a monkey wrench in those plans. And of course the other big X factor on that is the fact that the Tea Party came into control after they became a major player on Capitol Hill after the 2010 elections, and a lot of those lawmakers are very much in favor of outsourcing. I was talking to, I mentioned Congressman Ross earlier, the head of the Federal Workforce Subcommittee, and he is, he said that we should look at outsourcing lots of things, even certain jobs like transportation security. And he said if the private sector can do it better, we should let the private sector do it. If the private sector can do it better and cheaper, we should let them do it. So, yeah, the Obama administration is certainly going to run into headwinds from Capitol Hill as it tries to do those outsourcing plans that it was hoping for.
It's interesting that when they talk about outsourcing things like security, the Guard Force, police force, and whatnot, federal agencies, they maintain the U.S. Capitol Police. These are sworn officers, well-trained officers, and they want federal workers guarding them.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if we started seeing the Capitol Police cut in large numbers and replaced with private security forces. But might be a case of what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah, the word hypocrisy comes to mind there on this. Got an email from Dale at the IRS in Houston, and he says, last week's article in the local rag, the Houston Chronicle, stated that Social Security was reducing their hours because of the lower SSA budget. The article said Social Security, did not have the funds to pay overtime for their employees. How come SSA has a budget and the IRS, to our knowledge, does not?
I'm not sure he's certainly right. SSA, the Social Security Administration, has cut back on overtime. They note that the budget they're operating under this year is about almost $1 billion less than what the president requested, and that's one reason why they're cutting back on public office hours for their field offices by a half hour a day. I'm not sure what he's referring to on the IRS. As far as I know, the IRS, like every other federal agency, is operating under the year-long continuing resolution that was passed in April. So I think what's interesting about Social Security Administration is they've been a bit more public about some of their cost-cutting efforts, perhaps because they deal so extensively with the public than other agencies have.
Do you find it strange that this Congress, both houses, both parties, they're talking about cutting Social Security, and they're talking about, or they want to reduce some elements want to reduce the workforce at the IRS, seemingly unaware of the fact that this is one of Uncle Sam's few profit making organizations. Is this political? Is it philosophical?
A bit of both, I think. There are certainly members of Congress who don't particularly like the IRS, see it as sort of a the tax collector for the welfare state, I think is how one person once put it. And I think there's also, probably on the part of some members, a lack of recognition that, as you noted, the IRS essentially is a profit center, and the more people it hires, probably the more revenue you're going to bring in.
I want to ask you something more about that. We need to take a break here on WFED 1500 AM, and we'll be right back.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is texting getting way out of hand? You know, I can't... Oh, please. Oh, that is funny. Where was I? Oh, yes, about texting. Pardon me. LOL, you are my BFF. So, like I was saying...
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
One large federal agency says allowing tablet computers on its network won't just satisfy the demands of its workforce, it could also save money. The Department of Veterans Affairs plans to start allowing iPads to access the VA network this October, and eventually CIO Roger Baker thinks they could replace department-issued laptops. Since the tablets tend to be cheaper, they could bring down VA's overall IT costs. Baker says he wants to give VA employees a choice between an iPad and a laptop.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Federal employees. With a two-year pay freeze, rising health care costs, and potential changes to retirement annuity calculations on the way, recent financial events may have you concerned. First Command Financial Advisors understand the federal benefits system and can help you maximize the value of your benefits. Visit federal.firstcommand.com for an office near you and to request a complimentary financial consultation. That's federal.firstcommand.com.
First Command Financial Planning, Inc. Member SIPC and FINRA. First Command is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us next Sunday, August 7th. We'll be celebrating D.C. Beer Week.
Yahoo!
Teddy Folkman's going to be in, and we're going to learn how to make our own brews. And you like sushi? Well, Taz is going to be in. He's going to be rolling up sushi with us.
Get beer here on Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 on 1500 and 820 AM.
Profile America, Wednesday, August 3rd. The 64th annual Maine Lobster Festival kicks off today, and by the time it ends on Sunday, 75,000 hungry people will have flocked to the city of Rockland. The first festival, held in 1947, drew 10,000 people, paying $1 for all the lobster they could eat. Aside from lobster dinners, this year's event features live entertainment, parades, and a 10K road race. Of course, you don't have to live in Maine to enjoy lobster, using air freight that can be served anywhere in the U.S. To satisfy our craving, nearly 82 million pounds of lobsters are trapped each year, worth over $306 million. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Join Alan Greenspan, the former chair of the Federal Reserve System, as he discusses the intersection of economics and IT at the Innovation Nation Forum, August 23rd at the D.C. Convention Center. Also there, the Merit Awards will recognize the best idea to use IT to improve government with a $50,000 cash prize. Shake IT up. Register at meritalk.com. That's MERITALK.com.
About 90% of federal employees live and work outside of Washington, D.C. We wondered what they would say if they could talk to HQ. So we asked them. Tune in all next week for our special series, Talk Back to Washington, insight for the federal manager on the workforce outside the Beltway. Hear from around the country and around the world what working conditions are like, what feds think of policy decisions, and what they want Washington to know. Talk Back to Washington all next week, mornings and afternoons at 8 past the hour on Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Sean Riley and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. Very interesting discussion about what may or may not be coming from the deficit reduction panel. This 12 members of the House and Senate, bipartisan, bicameral, and they are supposed to come up. And this will be like a BRAC situation, won't it? They're supposed to come up with recommendations that the House and the Senate will vote up or down.
As I understand it, yes, and then if they don't come up with recommendations, or they can't agree on recommendations, or the House and Senate fail to agree with whatever they recommend, then you'd see automatic cuts start kicking in, and the idea being these automatic cuts would be so drastic that this will essentially be a lever to force members of Congress to act and to approve a package so they won't have to take place.
Well, that's right, because with the exception of BRAC, when you appoint these blue ribbon panels to make recommendations and then Congress is supposed to deal with them up or down, Congress tends to punt, as it did with the Erskine Bowles Allard Simpson commission that the president appointed, and that the same thing was supposed to happen, and they sort of let it ride, but they did borrow some recommendations from it that, as you said earlier, may be coming back to haunt them.
That's right. That's kind of what you said is absolutely correct. I mean, we did have the Simpson-Bowles Commission last year, and they were pretty much supposed to do the same sort of thing we're talking about now. Congress really loves to reinvent the wheel. They love commissions. There's nothing more that they like doing than forming another commission to sort of punt off the hard decisions they can't make on their own. So we had the Simpson-Bowles Commission last year. They came up with a plan that didn't officially gain traction, and hopefully the idea is that this commission will have enough triggers, enough of a forcing mechanism to ensure that Congress actually does finally make a decision on where to cut.
Yeah, and I guess the message is target what you consider to be programs that are expendable or wasteful or whatnot, because if you don't, we're going to burn down a third of the building.
Yeah, I believe it's $1.2 trillion in cuts would be triggered automatically. Now, one thing that I did notice in the White House fact sheet is that they said that if that $1.2 trillion in automatic cuts is triggered, that federal and military retirements would not be touched by that. There's a few other things like Medicare, I believe, and some other programs affecting lower-income Americans that would also be left untouched by that automatic trigger. But we do know that federal and military retirements would be untouched.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I was talking with Bruce Moyer. He's a spokesman for the Federal Postal Alliance, which includes unions and organizations representing feds and retirees and whatnot. And he said that the White House interpretation is that if across the board cuts that will kick in if the bipartisan committee deadlocks or Congress fails to approve them, will not reach to civil service and military retirement. So you're confirming that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so people who are worried about not getting a check, for example, don't have to worry on that score.
Yeah, but the pain won't come there, but the pain will probably come in other places, as we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks.
Right, and as you point out, you guys think that that heading the list will be this one to require federal workers to kick in more for their retirement benefits.
Yeah, all indications, all signs are pointing towards that being a major component of what eventually does come out of a final deficit reduction plan.
And that's an immediate savings, too, whereas some of the things like the high three to high five, which is you've always thought is low on the priority list, would produce savings, but they would almost be invisible savings.
Yeah, those savings would not kick in until employees retire, which, you know, you'd have a few in the first couple of years, and it would the savings would start to grow as the years go by. But yeah, the increase in contributions would produce major additional revenues right away. It would hurt federal employees. There's no doubt about that. But it would generate more money for the Treasury, which is why a lot of lawmakers are so keen on this idea.
And you made a good point that this change, if it happens, if it's proposed, if it happens, wouldn't be implemented until at least the pay freeze was over.
That was the plan that was being discussed in the House.
Okay, to add insult to injury. Yeah, you mentioned that Congress likes to reinvent the wheel and rediscover these things. Twice that I can remember, Congress has slimmed down the IRS and turned over work of collecting outstanding tax debts, to the private sector on the grounds that they could do it better, cheaper. Twice that program has apparently failed. Various people monitoring it said that they didn't do as good a job as the IRS, and that their take on it, which I think was 25% of whatever they could collect, was much, much bigger, that the IRS people could do it better. Do you see son of junkyard dog collectors coming back?
It's certainly possible. I mean, we could, as I said, the conservatives, especially the members of the Tea Party caucus, are not too hot on the size of the federal workforce, very much in favor of outsourcing some of these jobs. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if lawmakers, especially in the House, start to move, take another swing at that kind of issue.
Well, we can all three dust off stories we've written about the last two efforts and just update them a little bit and go with it. Hey, I hate it when radio people do this, but we got about 2 minutes. Can you tell us what you're working on right now?
Well, right now I'm working on a story about hiring times in the federal government. The federal government's been working on a hiring reform effort, trying to speed up this really sluggish process. It's showing progress, and I just got some stats on broken out agency by agency, and most agencies were seeing some sizable progress, but there's a few agencies such as Justice and Small Business Administration and the Social Security Administration that actually kind of backslid in 2010, saw their hiring times increase. And I'm trying to find out, you know, exactly why that may be so. Talking to SSA, they said that their hiring freeze may have contributed to that, but they're also doing a lot of hiring of mission-critical employees that is requiring some very specific evaluation techniques, written techniques, testing how well they interact with the public, which is adding to the time, their times. So overall, progress on hiring reform, but there's still a few agencies that are still working on it.
Well, you know, I would think, too, that looking at Justice, some of the banking scandals and some of the problems at SBA and SEC and whatnot, and Social Security for that matter, that security clearances are a major factor in background checks, and that maybe if you speed this process up too much, we could be in trouble.
Yeah, that is one problem. You know, talking to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, their hiring times were reported to be flat in 2010, and they said that security clearances are an issue for them because they have to get people cleared. So, yeah, that could be one potential issue kind of tripping them up.
Right, because I can see Congress demanding that they shorten times and be more efficient, streamline, and then the first time you have somebody pop up who should have been caught, who should not have been hired, maybe even someone dangerous, there'll be a congressional committee to want to know why they speed up the hiring process and why they don't take more time with it. All right, folks, listen, thank you. We'll talk to you, see you here next week. Thanks for being along. Remember, our show's archived. You can listen to it anytime. An unusually good show today. Highly recommend it. See you next week. Have a good week.